and welcome to Infotech Research Group's monthly threat landscape briefing. We use these briefings to cover current topics related to cybersecurity, such as threat actor campaigns, regulatory compliance and legal issues, and exploitation methods and tactics being used by today's cybercriminals. For this month's briefing, I will kick things off with a short word on how making vehicles smarter also makes them easier to hack. Then we'll hear from Cassandra Cooper, a senior research analyst on the security team, who's going to talk about back-to-back DDoS attacks targeting the British Labour Party. And lastly, Logan Rohde, a research analyst on the security team, will discuss China's federal encryption law. Without further ado, let's begin. Advancements in auto technology, whether that be heated seats or software that allows cars to drive themselves, can be very exciting for users. They can improve the safety of vehicles and make our experience smoother and more enjoyable. Unfortunately, some of these improvements open new doors for criminals looking to compromise a vehicle in some way. To make matters worse, we live in an age of mass information sharing via the internet. Consequently, it is relatively easy for somebody to find resources online about how to hack into vehicles that have certain features. All the criminal has to do now is keep an eye out for the makes and models of vehicles that have the features they can hack with their newly acquired information. Consider how malware like ransomware could affect vehicle owners. Criminals could hold a vehicle for ransom without having to physically steal the vehicle. While vehicle manufacturers bear a lot of the responsibility to ensure their cars remain secure, the user must share some of the responsibility. Like with computers and other IT systems, users must be aware of potential threats to their vehicle and take precautions to reduce the likelihood of a successful attack. Examples include being careful with which devices are connected to the vehicle, purchasing vehicles that have made securing these new technologies a priority, and monitoring the data that is stored in the vehicle's memory and ensuring it is deleted before passing the vehicle to a new owner. Now, this was just a quick summary for a potentially very disruptive future threat. If you are interested in reading more about this, UPI and government technology, which are both linked on the accompanying slide, have additional information on the reality of vehicle hacking.
In the month of November, we saw the first distributed denial of service attack reported on the British Labour Party. The intent of this was to thwart or to quell the party's digital campaign platforms, which, as we can imagine, would be a majorly debilitating factor considering the most recent developments and general overall temperamental nature of the British political landscape at current state. So for those who might be unfamiliar with the term, distributed denial of service attack, or DDoS, attack occurs when a malicious external user floods a website, server, network, or digital service platform until the sheer volume of traffic overwhelms the platform in question to the point of its imminent collapse or complete disruption in service. So generally, DDoS attacks are meant as a distraction of sorts, a well-informed smoke and mirror show, if you will, as they provide hackers or cyber criminals with the opportunity to then pursue more malicious cyber criminal activities. The victim's cybersecurity team would logically shift gear to respond to the service disruption that's been caused by the initial attack. So as such, distributed denial of service attacks themselves do not often result in direct damage or a specific data breach, but they lay the groundwork for more dire consequences to come or for something to happen at a deeper level in the future. So there are many different classifications or types of distributed denial of service attacks. Three key ones or common ones that we're familiar with are volume-based attacks, which essentially overwhelm a network's bandwidth. Protocol attacks, which are a little bit more focused or intentional and focus on exploiting vulnerabilities within servers' resources. And then application attacks, and this is actually the most sophisticated form of a distributed denial of service attack. So the question is, how do you know when you're the victim of one? Well, unfortunately, the symptoms or traits are actually quite similar to ones that you may experience with any operating system at a given time. This might include delayed access to your files, a really poor internet connection, or weak network availability, or an increased volume of spam messages or emails. So we'll circle back now to the incident in question just for a moment and the resulting response and impact that came out of this. So in the case of the Labour Party, the attempted hacks were deemed unsuccessful. But although the Labour Party's representatives did their best to put up a united stoic front following the attack, you could say that mixed messages were received by the public. After the initial attack, deemed as a large-scale, sophisticated attempt to take the party's digital campaign platforms entirely offline, the party encountered a disruption in the operation of some of its campaign platforms, namely Labour Connects, which was closed for maintenance the day of the attack, but was able to have full functionality restored within 24 hours, allegedly without any party data being subject to a security or data breach. A representative from the National Cybersecurity Center confirmed the statement of one of the Labour Party spokespersons, indicating that the party did in fact follow all the appropriate response and reporting procedures necessitated by the NCSC after an attack of this scale. While initial media statements from the party maintained an air of calm certainty, follow-up statements from party leader Jeremy Corbyn were slightly less confident, as he stated that the attack was very suspicious and very serious, especially when linked with the magnitude of the impending election and the overall timing. A potent coupling of a volatile current political climate combined with increased prevalence of cybercrime is brewing. And although no significant damage was done from a data privacy perspective in this specific instance, political leaders and their respective support staff must take note and ensure that the appropriate safeguards are in place when it comes to impending threats and the appropriate response and recovery processes. It is not enough to simply rely on protection product suites or services, as they're not a fail-proof catch-all, especially in this current environment. Ensure that your team is educated in observing and in understanding the signs of a potential impending attack to avoid becoming the subject of the next news headline.
China has a new federal encryption law that stands to open up the country's once very closed encryption industry. In 1999, China began federally regulating encryption. Encryption became a state secret and had to be treated as such. This meant that there was governmental oversight on the production, sale, and use of all encryption products. In 2005 and 2007, additional regulations were passed that imposed a licensing process for encryption vendors and required approval for encryption products to be imported or exported. However, in 2017, things began to change. China made a pro-market move, eliminating these licensing requirements that had been created years earlier, making it much easier for both domestic and foreign businesses to operate in the country. And in October 2019, a new law was published that is intended to replace these old regulations and to further relax the controls on the industry, thus supporting domestic and foreign businesses operating in China. The new law takes effect on January 1st. However, Lexology.com notes that it, quote, does not deal with the continuing status of the current commercial encryption regulation and the sprawling regulations published under it, end quote, many of which are incompatible with the new law. If your organization has dealings in China, you may want to seek legal advice on how to proceed, given these disparities.
This concludes this month's briefing. If you have any questions about what you've heard, want to learn more, or need any support, please do not hesitate to contact us and set up an analyst call. Thank you, and see you next month.